Hello and welcome to another Arsblog Arscast on arsblog.com in association with oleole.com, the football community website, and some Tuck Crackers, which I had just eaten and have made my mouth all kind of... There's all bits of Tuck Cracker and they're so dry and salty, and I don't even have a beer up here yet, so I better go down and get myself a beer. Just hang on a sec. Sorry about that. Now, there you go. I now have a beer, and my mouth is less salty and Tuck Crackery than it was just a few moments ago. Oh, the miracles of, you know, liquid, I suppose. Coming up on today's show, we have got the man in the bar who's got another player history for you. As well as that, we'll be looking at all the Arsenal news that's gone on. In-depth analysis of the busy, busy week that we've had. Yeah, well, I mean, we'll do our best. And coming up very shortly, I'll be talking to former Arsenal player Peter Marinello, who's got a book out at the moment, and a rather different football book it is too. So we'll touch on that very shortly indeed. Now, let's talk for a few minutes about some of the stories that have happened this week. I was going to talk about the weather here, because it's been raining in Dublin for about 2 weeks, and I don't think we've actually seen the sun for about 10 days. And I know, you're going to say, look, you lived in Spain, you're the one that came back to Ireland, serves you right, you bastard. Which would be fair enough, apart from the name-calling bit, there's no need to call me a bastard. But it is still very depressing that this is June, and I miss going round in my Speedos and flip-flops, you know. There's probably more information than you needed to know. Jeremy Aliadier has been and gone. He is now a Middlesbrough player, and he was talking about how he didn't get his chances at Arsenal, and, you know, Reyes wasn't great at the beginning, Van Persie wasn't great at the beginning, but he had a lower salary, so it was okay to put him on the bench. You know, my recollection is that he got plenty of chances. Yeah, but every time he came on, he seemed to, you know, snap a cruciate or break his back or, you know, have a brain tumour or something like that. He was at the club for 8 years. 8 years. I know he arrived young, but he was still there for 8 years. I think he was the second longest player at the club after Freddie Ljungberg. I think he was there longer than Thierry. So in all those 8 years, he managed to score one league goal. So it seems a little bit, you know, churlish of him now to complain that he wasn't given chances at Arsenal. He was given the chances, he just didn't take them, you see. So there you go, that's Jeremy Aliadier. Good luck to him at Middlesbrough. I'm sure it'll be loads of fun for him up there. Arsene Wenger, earlier in the week, was linked with a move to Barcelona as Barcelona head coach after Barcelona were pipped to the league by Real Madrid on Sunday, despite a 5-0 or 5-1 win over Gymnastique. Real Madrid won the league with a 3-1 win over Real Mallorca. Who should pop up with the goals? No, it wasn't Golden Boy himself, David Beckham, on his final appearance for Real Madrid. The fairy tale wasn't for him. It was for Jose Antonio Reyes, who came on and scored with his first touch, and then, after Diarra had sort of headed one in, he scored a third goal to more or less seal the league. What an impact he made. But, you know, that's it in the final game of the season. Hasn't really done enough to show that, or to show Real Madrid that he's worth spending the money that they sort of have agreed with Arsenal, because I think the fee that they have agreed with Arsenal is lower than, or is higher than they would like to pay. Whether or not they see him as part of their plans, who knows, because Real Madrid are, you know, looking like they're going to get rid of Fabio Capello, who's just won the league. They're going to fire him, bring in Bernd Schuster, so nobody knows anything at Real Madrid about what's going to happen. So Reyes, though, didn't do himself any harm, put himself in the shop window. There are supposedly 3 Spanish clubs interested. His agent said, look, if it doesn't work out with any of those clubs, if we don't get if Arsenal don't get an offer, that's the word I'm looking for, if they don't get an offer worth talking about, well, you know, Jose can come back and he'll start next season with Arsenal. I can't really see it happening, I have to say. I'm sure a deal will be done during the summer. And while we have sort of missed his directness, you know, we just have to accept the fact that he's not a guy that's suited to English football. And although he did well for Madrid, he didn't set the world on fire either. So, yeah, we'll get what we can for him. And then we shall bring in an Icelandic youngster called Bjarni or something. And we'll spend £3 million on him. And then he'll never play. Yeah, I mean, the Wenger to Barcelona story, yeah, bollocks. Absolute, complete, paper talk, rubbish, bollocks. They're putting two and two together and getting 9,006. Thierry Henry still linked with moves away. We've had no word from the captain, no word from the club after all the speculation that took place last week, which led myself and the bloke from East Lower to deduce or decide or opine, if you will, that Thierry would be on his way this summer. We've had nothing from Thierry to suggest that staying at Arsenal is his first priority, so we'll have to wait and see. The Spanish press are still going on with stories about how he has already agreed terms at Barcelona and they just need to, you know, do the deal with Arsenal, etc., etc., etc. I suppose it'll all heat up in the next few weeks and we'll just see what happens. As I said the other week, I'm just staying calm. Not getting stressed about it in the slightest. More Arsenal news a little bit later on. Now then, in 1970, Arsenal spent £100,000, which is a very, very big transfer fee at the time, on a young Scottish player from Hibs called Peter Marinello. He was a tricky winger, good-looking guy, and a lot was expected from him. Unfortunately, things didn't work out for him on the pitch, and as it turns out, they didn't work out for him off the pitch as well. He's got a new book out, which is called Fallen Idol, which is IDLE, in case you think he's being a bit up himself, but he's not. Fallen Idol, fighting back from the booze, swindles and drugs that ripped my life apart. It's available now in your bookshops. We'll also link to it on the blog. You can click through to Amazon and buy it from there. But right now, I'm delighted to welcome Peter Marinello to the Arsecast. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
Hey. Now, you joined Arsenal at the age of 19 for £100,000, and I read somewhere today that somebody said that's the equivalent of a £9 or £10 million transfer today. You were called the next George Best, and one of the Arsenal directors said that we've just bought the nearest thing that football has to the Beatles. It's a good job there wasn't any pressure on you.
Yeah, they called me the Scottish Georgie Best because the long hair and the fashionable clothes. My first game was against Manchester United, and I probably did the worst thing I ever did. I scored my goal on my debut.
Wow.
George wasn't playing that day, he was suspended. And of course, the London press got a hold of it, and I think they were looking for something equivalent to the Manchester George Best. So they sort of picked on me. So I had the same style, a winger, ran close with the ball, was quick, and sort of had the dark looks. So it was inevitable I was going to be the London's George Best, which was with me, you know, until this day.
Okay. Was the expectation in that regard built up by the press, or were the expectations of Arsenal slightly lower than that?
No, I think I had the ability. It's just everything happened too much, too quick, too soon. You know, I'd been playing up in Scotland for about... I'd been signed since I was 13, but obviously it was a different kind of game up there. We played with two wingers, and coming down to sort of Arsenal's set, you know, 4-3-3, 4-4-2, we played with two wingers, five forwards. I think that took a bit, you know. I was allowed to do more or less what I wanted, and whereas when I signed for Arsenal, I was to conform.
Right,
and I didn't really take too kindly to that.
Was that, you know, I suppose being so young, you weren't too keen?
I was probably too young, and everybody, I just got what I wanted. And like, I think I used to infuriate Don Howe if I took a few players on and lost the ball. I used to stand with my hands on my hips waiting for somebody to give me it back. Whereas maybe I should have worked a lot harder. I was just young at the time, you know.
Sure, sure. Was there a huge difference when you talk about coming down from Hibs to Arsenal in terms of not only the clubs and the way training worked, but obviously life in general between Edinburgh and London? Were the bright lights of London a big appeal to a young guy?
They were a big attraction, you know. I liked the clothes. Edinburgh was a city, but it was a small city compared with London. And the training was just totally different. You know, really, it was quite easy up at Easter Road in Edinburgh. And it was a culture shock coming down. We never trained really in the afternoon up in Edinburgh, whereas in London, we used to train quite hard. Weights, sprints, it was totally different to what I was, to what I'd been used to. And it took some time.
You left Arsenal, you only played 51 games, and then, you know, as you said yourself at the time, you sort of engineered a move to Portsmouth. Do you feel now maybe you should have stuck it out a bit more at Arsenal?
Oh, yeah, in hindsight, I loved it at Portsmouth. The fans were great, but career-wise, it was a bit of a disaster because Bertie Mee, the Arsenal manager, had offered me a 6-year contract. I was just fed up being left out in the big games. He did stress, he said, "We bought you for the future, Peter." I'd agreed to sign for Portsmouth in the May, but I went on tour with Arsenal in the June to Bermuda and Canada. And he asked me about 6 times on that trip, you know, you can still cancel the deal. But you can't put an old head on young shoulders. And in hindsight, it was a bad move because the double team were breaking up. The younger lads were coming through, the Chippy Bradys, Graham Rixies, the O'Learys, Stapletons. It was a totally different breed of player coming through. And career-wise, I just drifted from club to club after that.
Do you think at any point you fulfilled the potential that you had and that people, the skill that people saw in you, no?
No, I never fulfilled the potential. I had spells at different clubs I thought I played well. I was a winger, I wasn't even that very ambitious. I got there too quickly because my idol was George Best, and to even be compared in the same sentence was fantastic. And like every club I enjoyed, but I was quite happy just to play for the first team. I wasn't really bothered about international caps. I knew if things were going wrong with any particular club, I always had the ability to turn it on and somebody else would be interested in me.
Sure.
And that's more or less how it developed over my career. Half boots will travel, you know.
Sure.
If you don't like me, I didn't want to leave Hibs. I was too young. But they says, "Look, we can't turn down this type of money." I was quite just happy. I'd only played about 15 reserve games for Hibs, and I was straight in the first team.
Right.
So everything was quick. Was very, very quick, and I got there too quick. Don Howe worked hard on me, trying to mould me into a more English type of player to work hard, but I was a bit of a rebel, you know, a bit of a spoiled brat maybe.
Sure, okay. Well, I mean, I'm looking, you have the book out, obviously, which is called Fallen Idol, Fighting Back from the Booze, Swindles and Drugs that Ripped My Life Apart. So obviously there was a lot going on off the pitch as well. In the sort of the bump here, you talk about involvement with gangsters, being swindled out of all your money, threats to shoot someone, arrested for... Who did you try to kill?
I tried to kill we tried to frighten my partner to get some money back.
Right.
I had signed personal guarantees on business deals, and everything was going to go under, and I was the one that was going to lose 2 houses, a couple of pubs, and the part owner of a nightclub. And we chased this guy around the Midlands, and everywhere we went, he had spent the money, he had been gambling, he had been at the race courses, he had been taking his kids to Lapland private schools. It was just to frighten him to get some money, but obviously it backfired, and I was arrested, and I got nothing in the end, you know. I just lost everything.
Right. It seems to happen like that sometimes, doesn't it? That, you know, one thing just leads into another thing.
I was the bottom line because I'd signed a personal guarantee on all companies' debts, and the 2 partners that I had, their assets were worthless. So the creditors are not bothered who they get the money from, and they came from me.
There's other stories about being kidnapped in Nigeria while you were on tour with Hibernian.
I was kidnapped in, it was actually in Ghana.
Right.
It was a little island off the coast of Ghana. We went there for a sort of daily, with a day off from training, and we're just kicking about the beach. We played a game with some Russian sailors, and we just drifted away. It was quite a friendly game. We started to play with some canoes, and these guys came out of the sort of forest and came to the water's edge, and started shouting at me about one canoe, and I went across, and I don't know if we did it because we were just sort of larking about that they were pointing to a hole in one of the canoes. So they says they wanted money. You could see they wanted it with their hands. And they grabbed me and they held me. All my hips teammates sort of just drifted away.
Right.
And I was being held with these guys. And they looked quite fierce, you know. And this went on for about half an hour until our courier arrived. He was a big, big man, big black man. He looked like Idi Amin, you know, a big, powerful man. He managed to pull some money out, and a transfer fee was negotiated. I think one of our players actually had it on film, you know, from the old movie camera.
All right.
And showed it when we got back. But it was pretty scary at the time.
You've stayed involved in football at a local level, and I read that you only stopped playing a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I stopped playing a few years ago. I was actually in Norway with the ex-Arsenal guys in celebrity team, but I wasn't allowed to play because I had a hip replacement just about 18 months ago.
Right.
And I've been advised not to kick the ball anymore. But I still coach youngsters. I run an amateur team down in Bournemouth. And we play every Sunday, and I played up to about a year ago. My mother always says, stop playing when I was 48, but I kept on playing, and it just took its toll on my right side. I lost about 5-6 inches, and my left side's playing up a little bit. But, you know, they say they shoot horses, they should shoot all football players.
Don't know when to give up.
Yeah, that's true, yeah, because I just love playing.
Sure.
You know,
Do you, now that you're coaching this team, use your experience and the benefit of the experiences that you've had to try and shape and mould the younger players?
Yeah, I try to be attractive football. I'm still looking for, you know, the kid like a Ryan Giggs or a young George Best. I've got a little 10-year-old just now who's got a left foot. And, you know, he's very tricky on his left foot. But I'm still looking for, you know, the talent. You know, I've sent a few players to non-league teams and the lower division teams, but it's hard for the young British guys to break through now.
Sure.
Because the teams are buying so many foreigners.
Well, maybe Arsenal is the place to be, especially if you've got the young 10-year-old with a left foot. Arsenal are looking for a left-sided midfielder.
Maybe looking for an Archippy Brady.
Exactly. Well, Arsene likes them kind of young these days, doesn't he? So
that's right, yeah. Well, this kid's good in that, and he's living a lane. And you don't see kids playing in the lane or streets, but this kid's out every day after school, kicking the ball against the wall and keeping it up. And I like his attitude. So, well, actually, we start training on Sunday with the amateur team, so the little kid's going to come along and help us. And, you know, hopefully, I won't push him, you know, just to get a touch of the ball and keep you up here. You know, just to get used to playing football with other people, with kids, you know.
Sure, sure. In terms of Arsenal, you talked about playing there with the veterans team or the old timers team. Do you still have some kind of involvement with the club?
Oh yeah. It's we still go up every so often. I get invited up to do a bit of hospitality and things like that. And the Arsenal vets and celebrity team, we've been in Oslo the last 4 or 5 days. You know, Eddie Kelly and John Radford, Brian Hornsby, Perry Groves, and we've got Tony Hadley and. You know, the guy from Spandau Ballet.
Oh, yeah.
We've got quite a few. We've got the juggling champions, Paul Wood, who did this a documentary on search of Diego Maradona. You know, it's just an interesting bunch of guys who donate their time for charity and every Sunday. And they get invited abroad. The Arsenal Supporters Club in Oslo invited us across. I felt a bit, you know, I wanted to play, but obviously I couldn't. The lad from the Rat Pack, you know, plays Dean Martin. So it was it was a good social team.
Okay, well, final question. What do you make of the current Arsenal side, and what do you think maybe they've got to do to step it up a bit for next season?
Well, I think they're fantastically talented. They maybe just got maybe two the same type of player in midfield. Diaby looks like he's going to be a really good player. Fabregas is a great player, Fleb's a good player, Rosicky, but they're the same type of players.
Right.
Maybe a sort of centre half in the Frank McClintock mould or you know, Tony Adams mould, and maybe You know, it's a pity Dean Ashton been injured, you know. I'd like to see Dean Ashton, because I think he could do a sort of Dennis Bergkamp role as well and score goals.
Right.
Darren Bent might have been a good signing, you know.
£13-14 million is a lot of money for...
That's right. Andy Johnson, I think, if they'd got him for £6 million, I think he'd have got 20 goals for Arsenal.
And 10 penalties at least.
That's right, yeah. Because they're trying to play... It's fantastic to watch, but the Chelsea game in the cup final, they should have been 3 or 4 up.
Yeah.
And you could sense it coming. Chelsea were going to come into the game and win it, you know.
Well, we'll see what happens next season.
But, you know, potentially it'll look great, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Majalut potentially 17-18, you know. I may have been a better player under Wagner, you know.
Oh, maybe so. I don't think he'd have let you away with all the good times.
I don't think so. No, I think he likes the British sort of... have a few drinks, you know.
Okay, well, Peter, look, we'll make sure to give the book a good plug on the website. Thanks a million for talking to me.
Plug the book up, yeah.
Well, I will, of course. Don't worry. Okay, right. Thanks a lot.
Right, good speaking to you.
You too. Bye.
Right, ta-da. Bye.
My thanks to Peter Marinello for taking the time to talk to the Arsecast. His book, Fallen Idol, is available in bookshops now through Headline Publishing. It's also available through websites like amazon.co.uk, and you'll find a link to that on today's blog, an interesting football biography. Another one I read during the week was Terry Neill's biography. Written in 1985, and there was an interesting part where he's talking about David Dean, and David Dean had just become a director at Arsenal, and he's talking about a day at the Dell in Southampton, and he said David Dean also wanted to, you know, spend as much time in the players' lounge as in the boardroom, and he walked past the dressing room with his wife down towards the players' lounge, and an elderly attendant at the Dell asked David Dean, he says, in the nicest possible way, if he could help him. "Ah, yes," said Dean, "I'm just going to the players' lounge." The doorman asked him if he had a ticket. "No," said Dean, "I just want to go through to the players' lounge." Tickets for the players' lounge, you see, were kind of like gold dust. The doorman says, "If that's the case, I'm very sorry indeed, but if you don't have a ticket, you can't go in. It's admission by ticket only, and I'm only doing my job. I've been instructed very definitely that no one must pass without a ticket." David Dean appeared to be getting angry then. "Do you know who I am?" he demanded. The doorman said, "I'm very sorry, sir. I don't." All the players were standing listening. Dean became more irate. "I'm a director of Arsenal, and I'm going into the players' lounge whether you like it or not." The more angry Dean became, the more polite and humble was the demeanour of the doorman. Eventually, Dean realised he was not going to defeat the doorman and withdrew. Har har, I do like that. Anyone who says, "Do you know who I am?" deserves everything they get. Another interesting story in the back of the book, he talks about how Arsenal came close to signing Diego Maradona, and how the Falklands conflict actually put paid to that deal. The negotiations were at a quite advanced stage. There was a talk of sponsorship deals with Coca-Cola and Puma in order to pay Maradona's salary. There was also JVC and Canon were coming on board, and Maradona had agreed a deal with Barcelona, but they were confident that they could get him to break that deal and come to Arsenal, amazingly enough. And then the Falklands War broke out, and the whole Argentina versus England thing, and it just didn't work out. Interesting part in the book, though. Neil says, "I believe Maradona would have been much more successful in England, where referees are generally able to enforce the laws of the game and eliminate the tackle from behind, rather than in Spain, where he was a marked man. Eventually, the amount of rough treatment he received caused him to snap, and he was suspended." There was a great, I think it was against Athletic Bilbao, you can find the video on YouTube, an absolute brawl, Maradona going around kicking things. Terry Neil says, "The Spaniards did not see the best of Diego Maradona, and I believe the Italians are no different. Maradona has not been an outstanding success for Napoli." The book was written in 1985, and of course I think it was 1986 when Maradona led Napoli to the title for the first time. So there you go. Hindsight is a wonderful thing, n'est-ce-pas? Now to the bar, where the man in the bar has a player history.
Hello, there you are again now. It's me, the man in the bar, with another player history for you. I have to say, I'm feeling a little bit depressed this week, so I am. The weather is absolutely shite. It's been bucketing down for days and days, and this is supposed to be the summer. I was trying to play cricket in my back garden and couldn't do it, and I was going to have a barbecue and I couldn't do it, and I was going to get sunburned and I couldn't do it, and I was going to do lots of sun-related activities, but I couldn't do any of them because of this weather. I see that crowded house lotter are playing here in Dublin tonight, so they are. I might go along, go to that Neil Finn fella and say, here you know the way, everywhere you go, you always take the weather with you. Well, do you think there's any way you could take this fucking rain away, because it's giving me a fucking pain in my gee, so it is. Well, maybe he won't take it, seeing as he's got to go on tour and he's probably got loads of amplifiers and guitars to take with him as well. Be difficult to fit the old weather in the truck. Anyway, today I'm going to tell you about a fella who joined Arsenal from Newcastle in 1976. He was Terry Neill's first signing to the club, and his name was Malcolm MacDonald. He cost Arsenal the princely sum of £333,333.33. What the fuck were they going to do with 33 pence? Anyway, Malcolm MacDonald had a big round head, and that meant he could head the ball very hard indeed. He was also known as Super Mac. Now, people might think this is because of his name, MacDonald, and he was a bit super on the pitch, but it wasn't. It was to do with an old Rain Macintosh that was passed down to him by his granddad, which gave him magic powers such as running quite fast and becoming partially invisible. Unfortunately, he wasn't allowed to wear the Macintosh when he was playing football. He scored a good few goals for Arsenal. Hang on, I'm just going to count them. 42, so it was in the end that he scored for Arsenal in about, let me count the appearances. Oh, lost count, hang on. 84 appearances. Now, he had a bit of an own knee injury, you see, and one summer they decided to send him to Sweden to see could he recuperate. But he couldn't, and the own knee injury forced him to retire from the game of football at the age of 29. After that, he became an alcoholic for a while, but then he decided he didn't like that, and he gave up drinking, and now he presents a radio show in the northeast of England. After spending many, many years studying their language so he could speak it fluently. It's true.
And the man in the bar will be back on next week's Arsecast with another player history. That's provided he doesn't get too depressed by the whole lack of sunshine thing and try and kill himself. He does have a bit of a history of suicide attempts, you see. Luckily for us, he's absolutely fucking crap at killing himself. Which must be, you know, in fairness, if you've got a mind to do it, one of the easiest things to do. Sort of jump off a cliff or, you know, take enough tablets. But these half-assed suicide... Yeah, anyway. I don't want to put ideas in his head. It's been a while since his last one, at least about 4 days. So hopefully things will be clear. Don't forget, if you are bored this summer and you want something to do, why not join oleole.com, the football community that's growing fast on the web. You can join up, get your own blog, post stories, make friends. It's sort of like MySpace crossed with Facebook crossed with pen pals. Remember old-fashioned pen pals? It's sort of like that. So join up, www.oleole.com. What else is there to talk about this week? Well, a few little bits and pieces. Danny Carbassioun was made Arsenal's chief scout in North America. Some eyebrows were raised. He's only 22, 23 years of age. How can he be Arsenal's chief scout? I sort of assume he's our only scout over there. You know, full time. So he's sort of like, he could give himself whatever title he wanted. You know, Supreme Ruler, Darth Carbassioun. Of the scouts, you know. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. And maybe we'll try and get Danny back on the Arsecast in the weeks ahead just to give us a bit more information about the role and what is expected of him and what exactly he'll be doing. Gilles Grimondi, the Grimster. He's been linked with the director of football role, which apparently has been turned down by Reading's Nicky Hammond. Now, that was only really reported in one newspaper. They say he was offered the job and he turned it down because he wasn't sure about whether or not, you know, it was a part-time position, but whether his position would be at risk. For example, if Kroenke came back in with David Dean and David Dean would say, no, sling your hook, mate. This is my job. I'm the one that negotiates with the players. They're my friends, and you can't talk to them. So he said no, apparently, we don't know. But Gilles Grimondi is being lined up according to the Mirror this week. He's been scouting for Arsenal and has brought such talent as Alexander Song to the club. I think I prefer Gilles when he was sort of going around kicking people, you know, and punching them in the side of the head. But, you know, maybe a better use of his talents would be to knock some sense into some players during contract negotiations. The chairman, Peter Hillwood, met with Stan Kroenke during the week, and he said everything went perfectly well. And there was a statement supposed to be released last Friday. Yeah, but nothing was forthcoming, and it was supposed to be released this week, and I don't know exactly what's going on there at all, but you would have to imagine that they're trying to work out some kind of a statement where each side puts, you know, an acceptable face forward. I mean, you can't ignore the fact that Kroenke owns a big chunk of the club, nor can you ignore the fact that David Dean owns a big chunk of the club. Maybe the board's willingness to work with Stan Kroenke might be based on an agreement between them not to work with David Dean. Who knows? These things appear to be all rather complicated, so we'll wait and see what happens, but a statement does have to be made to shareholders at some stage, and we'll find out exactly what happens there. Talk of Stan Kroenke being added to the Arsenal board so he can, you know, come on board, get to know everybody, and then buy the club. Bollocks, come on. You know, Stan Kroenke, just because he sits on the board, is not going to saddle the club with the debt that he needs to buy it. We don't want a Manchester United situation, and people look at United, and we go over this time and time again about United spending money, but all they're doing is adding to their debt. Bringing Stan Kroenke on board just to sit on the Arsenal board, even though he's, you know, miles away and lives in America and all that sort of stuff, just so he can we can facilitate the sale nice and easily to him in 2008... It doesn't make any sense to me. And articles that push that agenda are suspicious to me, I have to say. I'll say no more than that. Other than they make me suspicious and they make my brow furrow. If you could see me now, I'm looking suspiciously left to right, as if something suspicious is going on. So there you go. There isn't really very much else to talk about. So for this Arscast, that's just about it. I wish you a very, very happy weekend. Have a good one. Drink lots of beer. Fall over a bit, maybe. Just don't hit your head. And I'll talk to you on next week's Arscast, and, of course, all next week on the blog itself. Until then, take it easy. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Are you going to sign the contract? How about now? You've got 3 seconds to sign the contract or I'm gonna glass you. 1, 2, 3. Oh, wise guy, eh? I'm just gonna put on a little music. You stay comfortable in that chair.